excited to tell you about this wicked study that might just make you question whether you'd peek into the future if given the chance.
Well, maybe it would be a good thing because I kind of want my funeral to be a bit lit.
It's a computer model which is basically inspired by the human brain and the nervous system of humans.
And ogres have layers.
That it sounds like an episode of Black Mirror. Like, that's actually scary.
The authors of the studies have developed what people are calling a fortune-telling algorithm.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't even know that there were different types of AI.
2063.
A chemistry grad student had been poisoning his colleague at work.
What the actual hell?
And they found NDMA. I feel like the plot thickens.
What if I just... What if someone psychopathic just went in there and just released...
Oh, that's scary.
Let's not talk about that.
Let's go.
We're done. You're listening to the So Cultured podcast, where we bring you the latest science and tech goss, served with a side of piping hot labority.
We're your hosts, Liv,
Yaz,
and Taz.
Three girls with a passion for science and tech.
Look, we've got the credentials, so we should know what we're talking about.
We're asking the dumb questions so you don't have to, and obviously all opinions are our own.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and let's get into it. Welcome back, everyone, to episode 6 of the So Cultured podcast.
Oh my gosh, episode 6. Like, I actually can't believe we're this far through series 1 already. Like, to think that we're going to be recording for series 2 soon, like, it's actually crazy. But I'm actually going to take this opportunity to speak to you guys and just say, like, if you've enjoyed series 1 so far, please give us a little rating on whatever platform you're listening on, because it does obviously help us out and it will give us a lot more motivation for series 2 as well if we know that you guys are actually enjoying what we're doing. So yeah,
just to add to that as well, make sure you're following us on whatever streaming platform you listen to, so whether that's Apple or Spotify, because follows also really help us out, so we would really appreciate that.
And obviously we've had some absolutely hilarious gossip that we've had from you listeners writing into us. And we do want some more gossip for season 2. And obviously it doesn't have to be really psycho or crazy or anything so extreme. Just like general day-to-day stuff that's going on that you find is a bit like, what's going on? And you want a reaction, like, we're definitely here for it. So we're excited to see what you guys bring us in season 2.
Yeah, and any science topics that you might want us to cover, obviously we just do a little search as to what's come out and what's new and trending for what we cover. But if there's anything you want us to cover in particular, then let us know, because that would also be interesting to know.
Yeah definitely.
So we might be biased a little bit by English news stories, although Taz is in Australia, so maybe not, I don't know. But I think that actually does play a big part. But on that topic, I actually have a question for you guys.
Oh, okay.
So someone asked me this the other day, and I'm really interested in your answers. So they asked me, if you were forced to leave the country, where would you relocate to? Like, what country would you pick?
Hold on. First of all, why are we forced to leave the country?
I don't know. Just say hypothetically, you committed huge scientific fraud. And you've got to leave the country.
I'd go to Norway, because I did 3 months in Norway and I loved it. I was in Bergen doing some research, and Norway, okay, it's expensive, but like, it was so beautiful. It was so nice. I just loved it. And that actually, if I could do a postdoc in a Nordic country, I think I probably would, but who knows? I don't know. Where would you go?
I have heard that like Norway and places like that are like amazing places to live. Like, don't they have like really good healthcare, really good education, like all of that stuff?
Yeah, and they definitely like look after their employees and different companies, but then I don't know if they are all actually like happy. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes in Norway the whole like daylight issue can be a problem. Like, in some areas, if you're really north, like, it can be either like daylight for ages or really dark for ages and stuff.
Really? So, I didn't know that.
Did you not?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so the more north you go.
Because it's like in the Arctic Circle or something. Yeah. Something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
What, so you can have like no daylight or too much, like,
yeah,
loads of hours of daylight.
Day of just, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, that must be weird. Okay, where would you pick, Taz?
I was like, it's actually funny because the first places that came to mind, well, the first place that came to mind was Italy. Just because I love the food.
Good food.
I learned Italian at school. So
did
I'd want
to
like...
Can you say something to us in Italian?
Buongiorno.
Oh, that's what she'll say to Pietro.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Imagine.
Yeah, because they have great food. The language is nice. You have like hot areas of Italy, and then you also have the Alps, so you could do skiing. Like, I don't know, sounds dreamy to me.
Not many natural disasters there either, because I always worry about that. Like, I always think we're quite lucky to like live in England in the sense that like we don't ever really have to worry about that. And I think sometimes you take that for granted, because there's certain countries that you live in where like that is genuinely something you have to worry about quite often, is like storms or like typhoons or tsunamis. I always wonder this about like natural disasters and stuff, because maybe this is a really dumb thing to say, but like, can they predict when typhoons and stuff are going to happen? Like, how much do we actually, can we actually predict natural disasters? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is actually really interesting, because when we were in the Philippines, there was a typhoon that was heading our way, and on Google Maps, you could select this particular typhoon that was coming, and it would show you the exact position of the typhoon on Google Maps and its predicted direction. And so we were like, oh my God, I think it's going to miss us. And luckily it did, but I thought it was really cool, because I've obviously never seen anything like that, because we don't like get them. So it was really cool to like select this particular typhoon storm and just see it on Google Maps.
It must be AI, I don't know. Do you think it's AI? It must be, right? Because it's like prediction.
Yeah,
just, like,
definitely.
Weather predictions, previous stuff, like inputs, I don't know.
Very, I feel like AI and like predictive stuff in tech is getting like so much more advanced these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, guys, wait until I tell you what AI can predict today, because... yeah, it is getting pretty crazy. So with that, let's move on to today's science topic. Right, so today we are diving into the world of artificial intelligence, or AI, and I am so excited to tell you about this wicked study that might just make you question whether you'd peek into the future if given the chance. So that being said, to start off today's episode, I have a question for you guys. So if I said to you that I knew the date that both of you would die, would you want me to tell you?
No. My anxiety just couldn't. I couldn't. No. I don't want to know that.
Really?
What
if it was... oh, I really don't know. I don't think so. What if, let's say that, God forbid, you were to get a really like horrific disease that maybe you got... a really bad disease, and then doctors were like, you've got 3 months to live, and then you just went absolutely crazy and just like quit your job and sold your house and everything, and then you just lived. But if you knew that you was going to live to like 90, then you wouldn't do that. I don't know, that's actually my only reason I can think of that I would want to. Otherwise, I think I would probably be with you guys and I'd say no.
Yeah, but there was that film, did you ever watch it? It had Queen Latifah in, and I can't remember what it was called, but she literally had a brain scan, was told she had a few months to live, took all her savings out and like lived it up large, and it turned out there was a fault. Oh, this is like a spoiler.
This is what I'm saying. Fault
with the machine, and she actually wasn't dying, but she just spent all her money.
Imagine if that like, happened to you.
Yeah,
I mean, I've literally just done that, I'm not going to lie. Like, I've just spent all my money travelling around the world, but no regrets.
But you don't know you're going to die, so that's, like, a bit different.
Yeah, no, it's totally different. But, like, in answer to your question, I would not want to know. I think sometimes being naive to situations...
is a good thing.
...is so much better than being, like, aware.
Right, because one of us...
like, I think also, like, when you get older, you get more and more, like, self-aware of things. And I think that can just induce anxiety a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I'd just rather not.
Well, maybe it would be a good thing, because I kind of want my funeral to be a bit lit. Do you know what I mean? So like, if I could plan it, if I was going to die quite young, like, I haven't got a will at the moment, but I would want my funeral to be like the funeral of the of the time.
The funeral, do you know what
I
mean?
Like, I want to plan it.
But you could still do that, potentially.
How? If I'm dead, like beyond...
Yeah, just tell us all your funeral plans now, right now, and we'll make sure that they happen if it happens.
Thanks, guys.
So your answers are both no, you wouldn't want to know. Is that both your answers?
Correct.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, what if I told you guys that artificial intelligence, or AI, may now offer a version of this choice? Because late December last year, a study came out in Nature Computational Science with some freaky findings. So by examining data from millions of people's life events, behaviors, and outcomes, the authors of these studies have developed what people are calling a fortune-telling algorithm that can basically predict a person's life outcomes with crazy accuracy.
Nah, stop. Like, so you asking that question actually means that could be predicted. Like,
maybe.
But what do you actually mean by a person's life outcomes?
Yeah, so the model can basically predict things like how much you earn, or like the likelihood of you dying early. And this study has arisen from a field aiming to combine computer science with social sciences, which I thought was super cool because I feel like they're two fields that you wouldn't normally think would come together, but they have. And it's ended up in this really cool study.
That sounds like an episode of Black Mirror. Like, that's actually scary. It, like, it feels really dystopian.
Doesn't it?
It sounds exciting. I'm excited to hear about this study from you. But obviously, first, I feel like I and maybe some of our listeners might not truly know what AI actually is, because we hear about it so much these days. So maybe you could give us a little breakdown of what it is.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so yeah, let's start with an overview of what is AI. So AI, also known as artificial intelligence, is essentially the field of computer science that focuses on basically creating machines and systems that are capable of performing tasks that would typically require human intelligence. So like we said in the intro, it would typically require Taz to be in a lab, but an AI robot would basically get rid of the need for Taz. So you can think of it as us teaching computers to think, learn, and make decisions on their own, much like we do as humans. So essentially, we're just giving the machines the ability.
I think that's scary.
It is, I know. Well, it can be, but it also can be really great, which we'll get into today. But yeah, essentially, we're giving the machines the ability to analyze data, adapt to different situations, and solve problems, all without explicit programming for each specific task. So basically, you can make it do something without you explicitly having to tell it to do something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought everything had to be programmed in one, like, so each reaction and response happened.
Yeah, okay, well, AI comes in various forms. So there's narrow or weak AI, which is designed to handle, like, one specific task, like maybe voice recognition or image classification. But on the other end of the spectrum, you have something called general or strong AI, which possesses the ability to perform any intellectual task that a human can. But we're not quite there yet with, like, the other, like, the extreme end of strong AI. So much of the AI that we encounter today, or much of the AI that we know about, falls into this narrow AI category.
This actually sounds like iRobot. Have you guys seen it? Or I haven't seen it in ages, but this is giving iRobot vibes, which was made ages ago.
Well, it's like Terminator as well.
Yeah, I feel like all these sci-fi films are just like... oof. Kind of spooky.
I actually haven't watched iRobot, but I feel like I should. But yeah, I'll definitely add it to my watch list. But one of the exciting and transformative aspects of AI is machine learning. And within that, we have a subset of machine learning called deep learning. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later, but briefly, machine learning involves training algorithms to recognize patterns and make decisions based on data. So essentially, you're allowing the machine to learn from experience. And deep learning takes this a step further by using something called neural networks, which have multiple layers.
That sounds quite confusing or complex, but what do you actually mean by neural networks?
Yeah, so a neural network is kind of what it sounds like, if that makes any sense. So it's a computer model which is basically inspired by the human brain and the nervous system of humans and animals. So there are many different types of neural networks. Yeah. So for example, there's a type of neural network called transformer models,
which is what they used in the study that I'm going to tell you more about today. But like your brain, a neural network is made up of artificial neurons, and these neurons are connected and they can send signals to each other. So each neuron receives input from other neurons and then calculates an output that is passed on to other neurons, which I said neurons a lot. It sounds a bit confusing, but basically what they're doing is you can think of it like an onion has layers. That reminds me of Shrek, but you know that scene in Shrek where he's like,
oh my gosh, yes,
onions Shrek. Have layers. but
onions in ogres have layers.
That's it.
They're like onions. You're like,
oh yeah,
layers.
Yeah, ogres have layers. Okay, so like ogres, neural networks have layers. So basically, like, yeah, one layer learns something and then it passes that information on to the next layer and then you keep going. So obviously, as you keep peeling away at the layers, it gets more and more sophisticated. So that's kind of like how a neural network learns. That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't even know how people come up with these ideas, because that just sounds like literally, my brain can't even comprehend that level of, I don't know. But I think that makes sense. So I'm just going to sum up what you've said. So basically, AI is all about creating machines that can think and learn, basically like us. And the goal is to kind of make them perform tasks intelligently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't even know that there were different types of AI. To be honest, I don't even think I knew what I knew. I don't think I did know what AI was.
Okay, right. So before we get more into the study, I think we've had a lot of buzzwords like machine learning and deep learning. Can you just elaborate? Because I actually don't know much about this at all, and I'm sure some listeners might not either. But can you elaborate more on what makes deep learning stand out within the broad field of AI, and like, what's the difference between them and normal AI?
Yeah, sure. So deep learning, machine learning, AI, they're often kind of used or like spoke about as if they're like different things. But deep learning is actually a subset of machine learning, which itself is a subset of artificial learning. So you can think of it like a hierarchy. Like, you've got artificial intelligence, then within that you've got machine learning, and then within that you've got deep learning. Does that make sense? You know how you've got like biology, and then you've got genetics, and then you've got like epigenetics. So you've got that hierarchy that's kind of similar with AI, machine learning stuff.
Okay.
So what sets deep learning apart is...
I would never have thought that.
Yeah, exactly. It is crazy. I actually didn't even know it for the longest time as well. But yeah, what sets deep learning apart is its emphasis on neural networks. So this is what I told you about earlier, specifically deep neural networks. And these networks, like I said earlier, they're composed of multiple layers of interconnected nodes. And basically, they're designed to automatically learn and extract hierarchical representations of data. And this is what allows deep learning models to actually comprehend intricate patterns and features within the data. So I've also heard a lot of people often say that they're designed, like I said earlier, to actually represent the neural networks in human brains. And one of my favorite examples of deep learning is, you know, Charlotte Tilbury. I don't know if you guys, at Charlotte Tilbury last year, they released this app where you can actually like match your foundation shade. So you know how you'll like take pictures of you in like certain daylights and like take pictures of your skin up close, and then it matches your foundation. So that app, or like that shade matcher, will actually use deep learning. So what they would have done for that is, obviously I don't know that this is exactly what they've done, but this is kind of how it will work, is that they'll build a model by basically inputting loads of different pictures of like different skin colors, different skin tones, different skin textures, and they will have like some preset kind of like perfect matches for some people. They'll train the model to understand different things about people's skin tones, textures, colors, and basically pick them like the best shade. So that's like a good example of how deep learning works, again, also in the real world, but kind of like some of the applications for it.
Okay. In principle, it sounds really good and like a cool technology, but I guess if you've got like a unique skin tone, or I don't know, I find that I'll go to one makeup place and they're like, oh, you've got a warm tone. Others are like, no, you've got like a yellowy, cold undertone. And I'm literally just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just go for this L'Oreal £9 colour match one. I think that's quite good.
Back to what we were talking about. So we're talking about deep learning. What makes it stand out from normal AI? So this might get a bit technical, so bear with me. But there's three main things about deep learning that makes it different from normal AI.
Okay, just take it slow, because tech for me is something I feel like takes ages to like sink in.
All right, let's start with hierarchy of features. This is one feature about deep learning that makes it different from AI. So deep learning models can automatically learn and represent data at various levels of abstraction. Okay, so in other words, each layer in a deep neural network captures different features or patterns, which allows the model to understand complex relationships with the data. So if we go back to the, I feel like I'm so glad I brought up the shade matcher example now. Okay, so each, so if we're talking about a shade matcher deep learning neural network, one layer would be responsible for understanding something about skin texture. The next layer would be responsible for understanding something about skin color. But also it might also be looking at how skin color and skin texture also interact together. So then as you can imagine, each layer gets more and more complicated. The second one is end-to-end learning. So basically what this means is deep learning models can learn directly from raw data. Last one is scalability. So deep learning models often scale well with the size of the data. So basically the more data you give it, the better the improvement gets. So basically it can capture like more nuanced patterns and relationships. So again, rather than just looking at like skin tone, skin texture, it can look at like how different skin tones interact with different skin textures.
Okay, so I'm quite intrigued because obviously we started talking about this study that's predicting your death or the day you're gonna die. Can you tell us like how are they using this type of machine learning or deep learning to actually become a fortune telling algorithm? Because to me that is wild.
Okay, yeah, so let's dive in, or kind of like ease off on the complicated tech terms. So yeah, let's talk about this new AI model. So this was developed to model written language, which can be used to predict events in people's lives. So this is a research project from DTU, University of Copenhagen, and a few other unis in America as well, which basically shows that if you use large amounts of data about people's lives and train transformer models, so again, I mentioned these earlier, these are a type of deep learning model. They're very much like ChatGPT. So basically they're models that are used to process language. So it takes like, for example, like English language, not doesn't necessarily have to be English language, but like human language, and they can systematically organize the data and then use this to predict what will happen in a person's life and even estimate the time of death, apparently.
Okay, that is kind of mad, but what kind of data would you need to build a model capable of doing that?
At the heart of Life2Vec, I don't know if I've told you this already, but the model that they produced is called Life2Vec, so that's what they've called it. So at the heart of this model, there's this huge data set that the researchers use to train their model. So the data is held by Statistics Denmark, which is basically just like the central authority on Danish statistics. And although it's really tightly regulated, it can actually be accessed by some members of the public, obviously including researchers. And obviously the reason that it's really tightly controlled is because it's got like a super detailed registry of every Danish citizen, which I think is actually crazy. The reason that they've called it Life2Vec, now this is for my techies, so if you're not a techie, then don't worry, I'm going to break this down for you in just a second. But for those who are tech nerds, what they've done is they've created long patterns of recurring life events to feed into their model. And they've taken, like I said earlier, the transformer model approach, which is used to train LLMs on language and adapt it for a human life represented as a sequence of events. That sounds very confusing, so let's break it down. Essentially, the researchers have adapted language processing techniques and generated, basically, for each individual person, almost a vocabulary of life events. So Life2Vec could actually interpret sentences based on the data. So the data you give it, it will basically, like, you can give it some data and then it will basically like make a sentence out of that data. So it might make for a sentence like, in July 2022, Taz was awarded her PhD in biological science. Or it might make a sentence like, during her final year of her PhD, Yasmin started a science podcast. And it makes these sentences like from the data that you give it.
No, I don't like it. That's kind of...
Wow.
It now that is like, honestly, I'm very into tech and I'm very into like all of this, but even I am like, wow, that's really cool. Like, I don't get it, but it does it.
Yeah, like I'm saying it's spooky, it's scary, but it is really cool. Like the technology is insane. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that because my little brain can't comprehend how a computer is doing this. Because even my brain, yeah, like, honestly, I just don't put two and two together normally. So how is something else doing it better than us?
Honestly, I don't think like many people can comprehend it. Like I think even people who like work within this field, like I think sometimes like you might have a better understanding of most people, obviously, and you have a understanding of how it works. But like me, for example, like I use a lot of really complicated statistical methods. Like I know roughly how they work and why I'm doing what I'm doing, but do I know like the actual underlying like maths of it? Like no. I think that's okay.
I want to know though, how do you go from that to figuring out how you're potentially going to die? So tell us a bit more about that.
Basically what they did is they took data for the people in this study. I don't know if I told you, by the way, but there were 6.5 million people in the study, so like a huge amount of people. Well, but they took data from 2008 to 2015 on a subset of the 6.5 million people. Mm-hmm. And the people in this subset were between 35 and 65 years old. Now, they said they selected this group or this age group because apparently mortality in that age range is more difficult to predict, which I'm not going to lie, I don't really know why, but it's probably quite obvious. I don't know, because they're less likely to die between 35 and 65. I don't know.
What? Yeah, I don't really know how they came to that conclusion. Maybe it's like people under like 35, like usually it's easier to predict how someone's going to die under like at a younger age because, I don't know. Like, I've always seen, you know, you see
statistics. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Of like, oh, the biggest killer of kids under 18 is, I don't know. I don't know, but I always see stats like that. Whereas between 35 and 65, obviously there's so many things that could maybe cause you to die, like cancer and... I don't know.
I actually do get what you're saying, and I think you are right. And now you say it, it's really obvious. Okay. Anyway, basically, LifeDevec used the input data to infer the probability of a person surviving 4 years after 2016. So actually, were they truly looking at when you're going to die? No, they were just looking at a four-year period and saying, like, are you going to die in this four-year period or not? To test how good LifeDevec was, basically, they picked a group of 100,000 individuals where they knew that half of them survived and half of them had died. So the researchers knew who had died, but the algorithm didn't.
This makes sense. So you got they it? Used, So they picked people, the 100,000 individuals, that was like a past data set. So they already knew. Then they were trying to see how, like, what kind of match or the percentage accurate, the AI would predict the same thing.
Yeah, so basically you just have to have a data set that you already know the data for just to check, like, is it predicting correctly? Okay, so they put it to the test. They had the algorithm make individual predictions on whether or not someone lived. And they found out that the algorithm was correct 80% of the time, or specifically 78% of the time, which I don't know what you guys think, but 78 might not sound that good. But for an AI model, like, that is... really good, especially predicting something like as random and weird as like death, because death is like a super rare event when you actually deep it. Like, it's a rare event, like, you only die once. So
yeah,
so when you're saying, oh, it was correct 78% of the time, is this at an individual level? Like, there's 100,000 people and it's specifically said this person out of this data set will die, this person out of this data set will survive. Like, it's not saying, oh, I don't know, 50,000 people out of the 100,000 people are going to die? Or was it like literally on an individual level? Because I think that's like a really important thing to maybe...
Yeah, so they've said they've made individual predictions. So if it's correct 78% of the time, they've done it on 100,000 people. I'm assuming it correctly predicted 78,000 people whether they're going to die or not.
Wow. Okay.
Oh.
It says they've made individual predictions, so I'm assuming that, yeah, that's what they've done.
But what I don't get is how can they accurately predict that, because the study was looking at people from 2008 to 2015, and then, oh wait, no, I've answered my, I was, this study came out last year. Never mind. It's in the past. I was still thinking, yeah, if they were doing the study from 2008 to 2015, but they've used it from then, and then they've known, yeah, that people, okay, sorry, I'm there.
Also, just, this whole are you going to die or not? Like I said, they only looked in like a 4-year period. So they're just asking like, did you die in this 4-year period or not? Because yeah, like you said, if they've got data from like 2015, like a lot of people wouldn't have died.
I feel like with this, isn't it easier to say, like within a 4-year period, I would say between the ages of 35 and 65, probably it's going to be a low percent. There's not that many of people in this study that are going to have died. So then actually, is that 78% a good prediction? Like, is that a good stat?
Well, no, but surely they would selected 100,000 people based on the fact that they need a big enough data set of people dying. Like, they're not just taking... surely not just taking like 100,000 people at random putting it in. Surely they're like, right, let's try and get, I don't know, 30% of people from this data set will have died in that time, or I don't know, do you know what I mean? Like, surely they would have selected data to get enough, I don't know, statistical relevance
For the training of the model and stuff. But we're not,
okay, so it actually says on their website that because their cohort is very young, so between 35 and 65, almost everyone survived. So actually more than 95% of people in the group survived. So if they had created an algorithm that always predicted survive, it's obviously going to get high accuracy. Like, obviously it's going to come back high accuracy, right?
Yeah, because...
So they say to address the issue, they balance the data set. So equivalent of 50,000 with survive outcome and 50,000 with death outcome. So like Taja said, they take the data set where they know that like 50,000 have survived, 50,000 have died, okay, so that they're balancing that out.
Yeah, that makes sense. So did it actually say what made people more likely to die or not?
Yeah, so actually men were more likely to die than women. So the overall thing is that they found that it predicts really well. But these are some of the other findings that came out. So men are more likely to die than women, which I feel like is like something that people joke about. You know, when you see like those videos of men doing like crazy stuff and it's like, this is why men die younger than women. but yeah, I don't know. Like, why do you guys think that is? For example, why do you think men are more likely to die?
I personally think a really big thing is male suicide, personally. Like, I think I've heard that as being like the biggest killer in men under the age of 40 or something, so surely it's relevant to the cohort as well.
Yeah,
so that's one of my guesses.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I see so many stats about male suicide online, and I think that's something that just definitely needs to be talked about more. And I don't know why else. Is that it? Is that...
I was thinking that it could be because, like, I think in general, like, men are more socially patterned to, like, smoke, for example. Like, it's more acceptable for men to smoke than women. It's more acceptable for, like, men to drink than women. Like, socially, obviously, that would differ by country. But, yeah, I think there's, like, a range of reasons that it could be.
Lifestyle factors as well. Okay.
They also found that being a skilled worker, so, for example, like, being an engineer... Or this one's quite controversial, but having a diagnosis of a mental health problem such as depression or anxiety also led to an earlier death. I would ask you why you guys think that, but I feel like the reasons are quite obvious. Like, maybe being a skilled worker makes you more stressed. Obviously, having like mental health problems leads to like poor physical health for like a number of reasons. Yeah. So I feel like those findings kind of make sense, which I guess... Some people might think like, oh, that's really obvious. Like, why this huge AI model just to find out stuff that we kind of already know? But I do think it's really interesting that they're able to use AI to like make things that like make predictions that we know are true. That as well, one thing I found really interesting is that one of the other things they found is that being in a managerial position or having a high income often also push people towards the survive column. So the high income one makes sense. You've got more money, you've got access to like private healthcare. So... yeah, that's obvious. But I thought the managerial position one was really interesting.
Yeah, but you're more likely to be stressed, or you would have thought.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, though. I think, like, on the ground workers have it harder than people in higher up positions, not going to lie.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so just one thing I kind of want to say to round it off is that I know I kind of catfished you at the start, but just want to reiterate that the Life to Beck model does not predict at what age a person will die or how they'll die. For example, an algorithm cannot predict if a person is going to be killed in like a car accident on November the 12th, 2063. it's all just about kind of understanding what factors actually lead to you having a higher probability of death.
Yeah, I feel like I was expecting you to be able to put my history, my data or anything into this model or get AI to predict. And not that I would want to know, but I thought that was kind of where you were hinting, and that you would basically by the end of this podcast be able to give me my future prediction on when I was going to die. So it seems like the study didn't really do that. But what actually is the point then? Like, why would they do this study if they weren't going to predict like the day, the time, the way, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so first of all, the reason I want to discuss this on the podcast is because honestly, as soon as I saw all of these headlines, I literally knew that that would not be what the model is actually doing. So I feel like this is a good point to bring up the fact that like AI is always really hyped up and people always lie about what it actually does. And do you know what? The authors of this paper have now actually got a website where they've literally dedicated a website to like disproving all of the articles that say we can predict death. So yeah, anyways, back to why they actually did the study, like what was the purpose for them actually to build the model. So this is actually like words from the lead author on the study, well, not the lead author, but I think the corresponding author, anyways, like the PI involved. He says they use the model to address the fundamental question: to what extent can we predict events in your future based on conditions and events in your past? Scientifically, what they said is what's most exciting for them is not so much the prediction itself, so not so much predicting like whether you're more likely to die or not, but the aspects of the data that enable the model to provide such precise answers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is really important. I kind of mentioned it before, but I think it's really important study to kind of maybe give an indication of what is causing people to die early. And then we can then provide funding to those investigating those outlets. So say, I don't know, heart disease is the biggest killer of people in da-da-da, which is something we already know, but it might highlight other factors and then we can maybe help alleviate that in the future. But I think obviously this study was done in a wealthy country, right? So we have a good healthcare system. So I don't know if you could apply that to other countries, particularly developing countries, given like the economical and societal differences.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like it is really interesting because especially depending on what kind of data was put into the model, whether it's like the more frequently you visit the GP, the less likely you're gonna die because you're fixing problems earlier, like you're getting to the root cause of it, or you know, you're getting treatments. So that could be a factor, and then that could also help change different perceptions on going to the GP, going to the dentist, for example. Like a lot of people are scared, like if you knew, okay, if you go to the dentist twice a year or like however many times they recommend, and then it actually has evidence to say like we know more about like the prediction of people who didn't go at all in their life, like they died earlier or whatever the stats might have come out from it, I think that would be really interesting to know specifics and then help people like in the future. But I think it definitely would be interesting to see how this would, like this model can be used on other data sets. So I guess that's probably what they might be doing next. Well, I'd like to think that that's what they could do.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with everything that you guys said. And I kind of just want to leave today's episode on a really like cool quote that I read about this study. So I read this article and this guy was talking about AI. What he said is, "We're worried about the robots taking over the world and deciding they don't need us," he said. "What we need to worry about is the robots manipulating information and being able to predict a lot about our behavior, that we actually wind up having lives that are so predictable that they take some of the value out of living." And I thought that was such a nice quote.
Yeah, that
it's quite sad though.
Anyway, yeah. This wraps up today's exploration into the intersection of AI and our lives. It was a super interesting paper and topic of conversation. We would absolutely love to hear what you guys think about this model and the wider conversation of AI. And if you're listening on Spotify, you can use the poll on this episode to let us know if you would find out your death date if you was ever given the chance.
Girls, you won't believe what laboratory I have for you today.
What have we got?
So I didn't check any of the emails, but it is just something that I've been reading online, and I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with this one. And so it was just this article that came out that said a chemistry grad student had been poisoning his colleague at work.
What?
So like, I understand that there's going to be some rivalry when you're in the lab and stuff, but like the fact that you would go and seek chemicals and poison someone, like, I just don't understand. So this is why I just went down an absolute rabbit hole, because I was like, surely this isn't real.
Surely not.
And it basically just said that one student who had been minding his business at his desk, he was having his snacks, which he'd bought from the shop, and he would eat them and be like, this tastes really bitter. And then he'd be like, oh, he went on a long journey to see his parents or something. So he was in the car and he was drinking his water bottle. And again, he was like, this tastes really funny. It tastes really bitter. So he'd like left a little bit of the water left over and just thought, what the hell? But after he'd eaten some of his food that he'd had at his desk, he literally had diarrhea. He was throwing up, and he just thought, oh, it was like food poisoning like the dodgy food that he'd bought. And so it happened over like a while. And so, yeah, it was just like really weird. So long story short, he just hid a camera at his desk, and he then went off to like a lecture or whatever he went
Wait, stop. What do you mean he just put a camera at his desk? Like, first of all, wait, so he obviously suspected that someone...
Yeah, he thought, this is weird. Like,
like in a chemistry department as well.
Yeah. They're in like a department in the area, and he was just like, this is so weird. And then I think he'd even got a mate to try it and said, like, taste this, and the friend spat it out being like, this doesn't taste right. So the guy thought it can't just be food poisoning because he's buying it from the shop, blah blah blah. So he'd hid a camera and gone off, but like left his shop bought food or his own food that he'd made on his desk.
Where would you guys hide the camera?
I have no idea. Like, I don't know the actual ins and outs. And I didn't actually see any of the clips. I don't know. They didn't show.
I'm curious where you guys would put a camera, because I'm just thinking, like, where would I put the camera? Like, if I'm thinking about my old desk at uni, like, where would I put it that they wouldn't
see? Yeah, and it has to be zoomed out enough to see the culprit or something. Or like, you've got to put it specifically on your burger or like your sandwich, whatever you're having that day.
Oh my God, this sounds like a movie. This actually
exactly. So anyway, he watched back the video, and he caught his colleague going around his desk with a pipette.
What?
I'm gonna hide my water bottle from now on.
So okay, first of all, is the guy okay? Let's just clear that up first. Like,
he's okay. He's okay. So this story is not like he caught it early.
So he
obviously kept some of this water from his water bottle that tasted really funny and sent it off to forensic investigators, and they found NDMA, which is N-nitrosodimethylamine. I don't know how to pronounce anything, so someone else needs to pronounce it, whatever. NDMA, and that is literally what scientists or researchers will give rats to induce cancer.
Stop it. Wait, first of all, I thought you said MDMA. So M or N?
N for November. NDMA.
What the actual hell?
Literally. So anyway, this video caught the guy who was doing this and arrested him, being like, what is going on? And initially he'd lied, saying, oh, I just added ethanol to the food or the drink. Like, it was a bit of a joke. But because the forensic reports had actually found NDMA, they were like, you're lying. Like, we have actual evidence. What are you on about?
What?
And then I feel like the plot thickened, because in my head, when I was reading this, I was like, oh, like, they've obviously just got some rivalry, something's going on. They've maybe, like, made enemies in the lab. But they used to be roommates. And so at the time of when this guy was doing the poisonings, they weren't living together, but they did used to live together. And I was like, okay, so maybe something else was going on.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah, maybe. But as I said, the victim is okay. He figured this out early on. So, like, he didn't die from any of this. I don't know. I think it was a while ago, like a few years ago. So I don't know if there is any signs of cancer or anything that could have happened because of this. But because they caught the guy, he's now actually serving 8 years in prison.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, rightly so.
Yeah, so it was at Queen's University in Canada. So if anyone wants to read this article, it actually was at a uni. And it was obviously in a department. And I just, yeah.
That's really interesting. I feel like it opens up a wider conversation about like people's access to reagents. Because do you know what? Like, as you're saying this, I actually remember this story. And I don't know if this was on Netflix or I've watched a YouTube video about it. So I watch a lot of like true crime stuff on YouTube, as I'm sure a lot of the listeners do as well. But there was actually this story about this chemistry PhD student who was actually poisoning his neighbors. This has literally just come back to me.
Yeah, so I read about that too.
Yeah, they did the same thing. Like, they put a camera outside, like a Ring doorbell or something similar.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually found, like, they would see him on the camera, like, underneath their little, like, gap in their door, like, putting something underneath. And I'm pretty sure they had a kid as well. And
yeah, they did.
And he ended up getting arrested.
Yeah, they did. And he did it on several occasions. So he used a syringe and he was injecting toxins. And it was because he had already complained about noise to his neighbors and they didn't do anything. So he was a chemistry PhD student and he actually got deported back to China. So this was the rabbit hole that I was going down. And then I was just like reading all these different cases. I went on Reddit. There'd been loads of cases that people had reported and people were like, oh, I heard this rumor. And then it was like dot, 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 edit, update. It wasn't a rumor. It's real. So another case happened at Harvard in 2009 and a researcher had poisoned the communal coffee like canister or what's it called? Like a coffee.
Yeah.
Urn. Is it an urn?
An urn? I don't know. I know what you mean, like the barrel things. No?
Anyway, it was a communal espresso machine and this guy had put sodium azide, I don't know how to pronounce it. In it, and that causes respiratory failure. And so I think some of the people that were just having it had realized it tasted bitter and spat it out. But
why
are people doing this? Like, and this isn't it. Like, there's more cases because when you go on Reddit, like, if any listeners are interested, there are so many people that are reporting this. And I think what a lot of them have said is that it probably gets buried because universities don't want it to be released. And I think that's probably.
Yeah, definitely, because then they'd have to answer for, like, how these people had so much access to these, like, chemicals and, like, they could actually remove them from the lab and no one notices. Like, but you know what? When I think back, so I'm sure, like, most of the listeners know, you guys know, like, I'm a biomedician, so I don't work in the lab, but I cannot even tell you how easy it would be for me to walk into a lab and, like, literally pick up whatever I wanted and walk out. Yeah, someone might notice that it's gone, but, like, it's actually so easy for me to do that if I wanted to, which is really bad when you actually think about it.
Yeah, but they would hope that you're doing a PhD for the right reasons of doing, like, research. I don't know. I think it is insane.
I always think as well, like, obviously I have access to, like, really extreme viruses. Like, what if someone psychopathic just went in there and just released it?
Oh my God.
I used to think about that all the time.
Oh, no, that's scary.
Let's not talk about that. We're done.
I don't want to give anyone ideas. Like, please stop this conversation right here.
Yeah. So any listeners, if you do not like the person that you work in the lab with, you just have a bit of rivalry, they've published a paper and didn't put you on it, even though you helped. Like, anything could have happened, right? Do not resort to getting chemicals or toxins. Talk it out. face to face with them and be like, I don't like this. Please. None of this passive aggressive. And
we do not condone any of the behavior that we spoke about today. And also just to reiterate that everyone in these cases that we've spoken about today is alive and well and has no health issues that we are aware of.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Yaz. That was really interesting, but also kind of scary, to be honest. If only we had AI to predict if our co-workers poisoning us in the lab, that would be a bit more helpful. And at the start, we obviously spoke about pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone. So Yaz, what are we speaking about next week?
We're going to be talking about dark matter. And honestly, that is going to be a challenge.
I'm proud of you for taking that challenge on, to be honest, yes. Thanks. And I'm really excited to hear about it.
Also, if you have some hot gossip for us and would like to be featured in one of our episodes, then make sure you write in to us at So Cultured Podcast on Instagram or email us at soculturedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in for this week. We'll see you in a week.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the So Cultured Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Make sure you listen in next week for more science and tech updates and the hottest laboratory.
You can stay up to date with us in between episodes by following us on Instagram and X at So Cultured Podcast.
See you back here same time next week. Watch me break it.